This is a Digital Music Trends, episode 168 on the 29th of January 2014. This week on the show, SoundCloud's new round, Last.fm and YouTube, Grammys 2014, Prince sues fans, then takes it back, Rap Genius's app, news from China, Sweden, and more. If you're watching the video version, unfortunately we had a major glitch this week, but fear not, a whole new setup will come into play post-meeting, so please bear with us for this week. Hello everyone and welcome to Digital Music Trends. I'm Andrea Linelli and this is the weekly show where we talk about and try to make sense of the latest news in the digital music industry. DMT is available as audio and video on a variety of channels including the iTunes Store, most podcatching app including Downcast, YouTube, Mixcloud, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio and Audioboo. And to get in touch with the show you can tweet us on @DigiMusicTrends or email us on contact@DigitalMusicTrends.com. On DigitalMusicTrends.com you will also actually find a subscription, a voluntary subscription now for the podcast. If you want to contribute and you enjoy the show every week, you can go on digitalmusictrends.com and you'll find all the details on the right-hand side of the screen. And this week, it's a real pleasure to welcome to the show great guests. I've got a third one in the wings. Hopefully, she'll sort out her Skype problems and be able to join us in a second. But first of all, a great welcome, Clyde Smith from Hypebot, back to the show. So hi, Clyde, and great to have you on.
Great to be here.
Clyde writes some great pieces of music tech on Hypebot.com, and he's also really interested in crowdfunding, so he's got a lot of expertise in that field. So really great to have you on today. Actually, we might touch upon the Indiegogo fundraiser that was announced this week as well, so that could be pretty cool. And also, it's a real pleasure to welcome Pete Jimison as a guest on our show after taking part to a one-to-one show in 2013. And Pete comes from the company F-Sharp, which specializes in connecting brands and consumers through music. So, hey, Pete, great to have you on. And how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
It's great to have you. And so this week, we're going to start by talking about SoundCloud. So SoundCloud is a company that we haven't really opened the show with SoundCloud in a while because we didn't have many big news coming from the service. But last week, we learned that the company's rate closed a new round for $60 million, putting its valuation at around $700 million, as reported by the Wall Street Journal. The round was led by institutional venture partners and the Chernin Group with the participation of previous investors like Union Square and Index Ventures, amongst others, of course. And Recode reports that SoundCloud is going to start, or has already started, actually, looking at doing deals with labels to license the content properly. But to be honest, you know, there's still a lot of question marks here as to how the service will progress and how those licenses will be applied and what kind of scope they have. So, you know, will it be a real YouTube for audio and be ad-funded? Or will it turn into a subscription service? What is going to happen to that? So, Pete, first of all, you know, what are your thoughts on the fundraise and on the potential evolution of the service for you?
Oh, well, it's interesting. You know, I think that SoundCloud, like it mentioned a few articles, it's got all sorts of directions it could head, which is, I think, very interesting for SoundCloud versus, you know, some of the other players out there when you talk about streaming music like Spotify, RDO, et cetera. You know, because they have kind of a great community of creatives and they're known for that, I think that, you know, the focus on audio and creation and basically the community coming together and working with each other, that's always been a large part of SoundCloud. So the whole idea of getting into the licensing model and new content and competing with the likes of a Spotify, you know, obviously, I'm not sure how they're entertaining that, but to me, there's already so many competitors out there. And when people compare them to somebody like a YouTube, you know, YouTube music's coming out and YouTube already has all the eyes for the music. To me, it wouldn't make sense for SoundCloud to try to get into that area. I think they should stay with that artist community, with the, you know, just the creators that they already have and build off that and become much more focused on audio and expanding their reach. I mean, they can sit internationally, you don't have to worry about licensing because everybody has the content rights. That's
yeah, your thoughts on that. Clyde, you know, we're looking at a company with a very high valuation and, you know, Pete's talking about concentrating on curators and on creators of music especially. But, you know, is that sustainable for a company that has got such a high valuation and that, of course, plans on expanding in the long term, right?
Well, that's a good question. I'd love to know how much they make from their subscriptions and premium services. I mean, that would tell us a lot in terms of evaluating like how what they've done could grow or where they'd be at. I mean, we'd know how much, it'd be nice to know how much money they're making and obviously that always helps. I'm not sure moving forward. I mean, I like what they're doing. They just debuted a new player, I think, today or yesterday or something. That looks cool.
In terms of maybe advertising as well, that could be quite interesting.
The thing is, there's so many music services that are now trying to be ad supported, and there's going to be a lot more. And I really wonder about that ad inventory, to be honest. I hate the thing of put an ad on everything. You know, it's like there's already a lot of ad. There's so much advertising that's kind of canceling each other out.
Right.
And that said, I mean, I could see a little ad unit on that player doing well, but I don't know. It's just beyond that, it's hard to see, though, where they're going, because when they talk about the future, they talk about audio becoming this thing that will start posting, just like people post little video clips of their dog or whatever. But
yeah,
it's kind of a human, it's a behavior that isn't that widespread. So I don't know how they'll get there.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, is that a lot of advertisers are going towards this content generation. So you look at what they're providing for an advertiser to just create music or create audio files and then actually put onto SoundCloud and have all of that real estate with that new player to actually showcase the brand and the brand with the sponsoring. So I think that itself could open it up. And it doesn't resonate as much as like your normal advertising, like an advertising banner, as it is more of a, you know, sponsorship or just like the brand showing some of the cool stuff it's doing.
Yeah, because of course, you know, Peter, you have quite a bit of experience in the advertising and music space. So SoundCloud could be an attractive property to do that on for brands, especially with this new visual player. It's really stunning looking. So, but then how you go about implementing that, that's a real question mark, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, the new visual player is out. You can actually use it on any sound file that you have on SoundCloud right now. So I'd encourage you to check it out. I'm going to use it for the show, which I always do a SoundCloud embed on the site. And it looks really nice, actually. So that's pretty cool. And also for pro users, if you pause it, it actually displays all the tracks you've spotlighted on the service once you pause the embedded player. So it kind of gives people a bit of an opportunity to go from one thing to the next within your own sort of ecosystem of SoundCloud. And one company that is not doing so well is Last.fm, unfortunately. You know, the latest beta that has been demonstrated, has been opened up by the company, shows that Last.fm is intending to stop its radio service and move away from its own licensed radio and start using YouTube instead. So the move is seen as a cost-cutting one, you know, because the company has been losing money for quite some time for CBS. And there's no doubt that some people are going to read this as Last.fm being on its last legs. On the other side, of course, linking onto YouTube means that Last.fm could have a bit more adoption around the world, since it had to close its radio service in the vast majority of markets just over a year ago. I think at the moment, only the UK, US, and Germany have the service still going. So, you know, Claudio posted a very interesting piece on Hypebot about this and about why, you know, Last.fm might actually have some troubles trying to get away from its license model. So can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, my question, okay, when I was looking at it, so far I think the YouTube player has been an option people could have, and it's, I don't think they've officially said they're going to try to do that or not.
Right.
So obviously it's still kind of playing out, but my question was in terms of licensing, my understanding is that even if you're using things like SoundCloud and YouTube to power your music, if you get too popular, you'll still hear from music publishers about licensing.
Yeah.
And I would think Last.fm would be aware of the implications, but, you know, so again, it's one of these things where there's stuff happening behind the scenes you don't really know, but I don't think they could just go for it with YouTube and get away with that, from what I'm hearing from people.
Yeah, and Peter, what do you think about, you know, Last.fm as, you know, used to be a real Pandora competitor, but you know, it's lost that race quite a long time ago. So, where do you think it going? What do you see it going from now on? It's got a huge data pool still of users that are using it to scrabble music. You know, that's really an asset still of the service. But as far as an sort of outward-facing radio service, that hasn't really worked out. You know, what do you think they can do next?
Well, I think this is actually interesting, because if you look at YouTube, again, going back to what we were saying about YouTube Music and having all the content there on YouTube, You've got a few players that are out there now that are looking at taking that content and bringing it into their own sites, and whatever, using the purposes they already have on, let's say, Last.fm or like a wide.com.
Yeah.
What you end up seeing is basically they're giving a new user interface for the content. So each one of these sites is basically offering, you know, the ability to maybe scrabble and find new music or things of that nature that relate back to what you have been listening to. So The essence of discovery, the things that happen with music, you know, that's where it comes down to, is who can do that the best. And I think that's one thing that YouTube hasn't figured out. If you look at YouTube, it's still that standard display. And if I'm going to listen to music, I can't really go from one track to the next unless I just go to the related tracks on the side or I type it in. Where I think Last.fm has that upper hand because they've come from the music and they've already had the, you know, ability to showcase other songs and ways of getting and directing yourself through the site. So
yeah,
to me, that is definitely, you know, a positive for them. But where they seem to have lost a lot of their mojo from the past years, and a lot of people have left Last.fm and just don't feel as confident in the service. So
yeah,
you know, to me, I think another service will probably take over.
Yeah, sure. Unfortunately, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen or what. Of course, it's all in the hands of CBS as to what they do with the company from now on and whether they might actually be able to find a more appropriate outlet for the company services that they haven't really managed to capitalize themselves. I don't know. Maybe that could be an option, right, Clyde, in terms of another company actually buying Last.fm off them.
I guess, man.
Yeah. It's a difficult one.
That's hard to imagine, right? There are just so many services, and it's hard. I'm just expecting more people to drop out. So
right.
If they do it through mergers, that'd be one way, but I would be surprised if that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And, you know, we're going to keep an eye, of course, on what happens. And there's no saying, actually, that this beta program with the YouTube implementation is going to actually make it to the Golden Master. So we'll see what happens with that and whether Last.fm is actually going to ditch the radio service or not. But, you know, of course, I can imagine that people around the world might be interested in listening to more Last.fm content. But, you know, having lost that functionality from the radio a while back, then the YouTube fallback would be a pretty interesting other option for the service. But the Grammys happened last week. Did you guys watch them?
I missed the Grammys.
Excellent.
Sorry.
It's all right.
I read about them on the web.
Yeah. No, I actually called them up on, Monday night here in the UK. You know, the televised part did really well, actually, ratings-wise. They had 28 million viewers tuned into CBS in its second best performance since 1993. There were a couple of standout performances for me personally, like Imagine Dragons were the best ones on the show that night. And Pink also did something pretty spectacular, if nothing else, for the athleticism displayed in what she was doing. And singing at the same time, like keeping everything pretty smooth. And one of the notable things of the night was the fact that the independents actually gained over 50% of the awards, independent labels, and that's the biggest win in, you know, A2IM's history, so the history of independent labels in the US. And of course, you got Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, who are classed as independents, they released the album on their own labels, of course, with the help of Warner subsequently. They won three or four awards, I think. Vampire Weekend with the XL Recordings got Best Alternative Music Album for Modern Vampires of the City. Concord Music Group took home six awards in different genres, from blues to jazz to roots, and they had actually the most awards of the night as label-wise. So, Clyde, what do you make of this rise of the indies? Does it indicate that there is something in people that are saying that actually the market is shifting towards the independent production, independent labels, and that they have more of a chance to get heard given the widespread distribution online and on digital services?
Well, the basic news that indies did so well at the Grammys, I was really glad to hear that. There's a lot of things that the Grammys don't tell you about what happened in the year, but seeing indies get to this point is really powerful.
Yeah.
Obviously, the web's part of it, but I think also as things have changed, I haven't really tracked, I'm not familiar with the full history of label services and the kinds of things that like Macklemore and Lewis drew on to get their album distributed and to do the various things they did that an indie couldn't really pull off on their own.
Yeah.
So I think that development's been great. There has been some discussion at certain points that they aren't really independent if they're getting services from the majors. I think that's kind of a weird stance to take and would hold people back. I mean,
it's a bit like Adele, right?
What?
It's a bit like with Adele, what people.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great. I think it's great that labels are providing the services and the distribution and letting people do it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, sure. Peter, from your standpoint, you know, how do you see this market progress? You know, from a branding perspective, you work a lot with the brands as well. Do you see that that's reflected in brands' interest also in the independent market and how they want to place themselves amongst that group of artists and labels?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first thing, I think that you have an artist like Lord, you know, and you hear the story of how she was discovered. And if you actually watch, there was an article written about how Spotify helped break Lord and watch the virality of Lord take off. And I think that's going to become maybe much more commonplace, where you have artists that, you know, appear in random parts of the world. And then all of a sudden, because of the internet, they have the ability to get that exposure. And because of the tools and the like Spotify or things of that nature, which shows trends, you can actually see them come to the fold very much faster.
Yeah,
and that's what brands want to pick up on. I mean, a lot of advertisers are looking at who are these emerging artists because they want to get that cool factor. So, you know, they don't have to spend as much money.
Sure.
You know, me spending $10 million on a Lil Wayne versus spending, you know, $500,000 on a new emerging artist that hasn't produced a name yet.
Yeah.
And that's very telling. And I think for advertisers, it allows them to segment their audience into the certain target audiences. That's specific to certain, you know, genres or artists, and allow themselves to spread their media spend across a few artists instead of just one, which is even a better, greater potential if you know, like, about gambling and risk and stuff. So
yeah, sure, absolutely. And you know, it's also interesting to see. I mean, it's interesting to see the wins of the independent artists, but it's also interesting to see the lack of independent artists in the televised part of the awards, I guess, because aside from Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, you know, it was really like a show of majors, really. You know, on that front, there was an interesting piece from Variety, actually, where there was detailing what could be fixed with the Grammys. And one of the things they were talking about was fixing the variety of, you know, the contemporary nature of the acts that were nominated. Like, for example, they were making the example of the rock nominations, and of course we've seen the Led Zeppelin Celebration won the best rock album, and the best rock song went to Cut Me Some Slack from Dave Grohl's Sound City, which also included the old timer Paul McCartney. So you know, that's an interesting one. And and Variety also points out to the fact that the window for the Grammys is quite weird, because most of the releases that come out at the end of the year are not included. So in that very important Q4. So a lot of the people that end up being nominated are, you know, are albums that came out maybe at the tail end of 2012, which feels like a long time ago if you do the ceremony at the end of January. So, Clyde, do you think that there's something that can be improved there in maybe changing the window of people being able to be nominated on these awards?
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, these end of the year stuff is always so weird. I mean,
yeah.
I know, like, at Hypebot, I was like, or beginning of December, I'm getting all these end of year best of 2013 lists, and it's so not over. But by the time we'd gotten a bunch of those from big names, when it really got to be the end of year, it was like nobody wanted to really talk about it, and people stopped reading those articles. So,
yeah.
Those kind of schedules are always odd to me. It's hard to say.
Sure. Peter, do you think that, you know, the scheduling has an effect on you know, how people perceive the Grammys? You know, for example, if you see an album that came out, what it feels like ages ago, come on and win the Best Album Prize, you know, are people still going to be as interested in the awards as they would if they could see all of Q4 2013 releases as part of the ceremony as well?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I thought I was listening to a lot of old music. I was surprised by a lot of the tracks that were being recommended. And I do think that if you're going to have the Grammys in January of 2014, that should, you have time enough to make certain that it's all 2013 tracks.
Yeah.
I find it weird, but I'm kind of new to all of the, you know, Grammy selection process and all that stuff. So
yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand it. I was kind of surprised by a lot of the choices. You know, you saw Macklemore even write that he thought Kendrick Lamar should have won yeah. Best Album of the Year. So
absolutely,
that's kind of interesting.
Okay, Prince, that's fun. So guys, Prince generated a few headlines this week. Very exciting for me in London, because apparently Prince is going to play some yet to be announced dates in the capital in iconic venues. But that's actually nice. Supposed to happen in early February. So, I mean, it's almost early February. So we're going to have to see if and when these dates are announced. But Prince also made the headlines for, unfortunately, a more negative story, which is the fact that he decided to sue 22 fans for $22 million. Decided, you know, that the bootlegs that these fans had linked to were such an abomination and, you know, such a stain on his reputation as an artist that he had to sue them, and he had to, you know, see that they were punished for being such a big fans of his music, I guess. So unfortunately, so that's what happened. But actually, TMZ reported yesterday that whether it's following the backlash PR-wise or whether it's following Mike Masnick's piece on Tech Dirt, which was awesome and outlined all the legal flaws in the lawsuit, he decided to take it all back and the suit was dropped yesterday. So, you know, the Prince that we know would have probably carried this all the way, even if it meant going to the Supreme Court, at least the Prince from a few years back. So, you know, what do you make of it, and what do you make of the fact that he eventually dropped the charges? Pete, any thoughts on Prince?
I just think that anytime you sue your fans, it's a bad idea. I mean, come on, you know, and the guy's got millions of fans. I just feel like, you know, he's just hurting his own reputation.
Yeah.
I have nothing else to say about that. I really don't. I think that, you know, if artists aren't going to accept the internet, they're not going to accept, you know, the progress that we're making in terms of technology. Then you might as well stop playing music, because it's inevitable, and it's just, it's, you know, I mean, it's just something that's going to happen, and your fans are on there. They're going to be sharing. They're going to be, you know, trying, like, I guess people were using some of the music and making mixes, and yeah, I can understand in terms of copyright, but at the same point, you know, you have a strong fan base that is just basically sharing the love of your music.
Yeah.
Why go after them? Why not go after some, like, maybe the sites or things that is actually, you know, supporting? If you're going to go after anybody, don't go after your fans. That's
all. Exactly. Yeah, that's right. And you know, Clyde, have you followed Prince's sort of history over the years? And you know, do you think that the backlash that was generated by the fact that this was reported, it came out essentially, may have led to sort of a him deciding to drop the guard on it, or you know, decided to drop the suit, or you know, why would you think he would have had a change of heart otherwise?
I don't know. He's his royal badness. It's hard. Who knows how he operates? But there is a weird thing that seems to happen when you get really rich and famous, is you're suddenly surrounded by people who are gonna do what you say,
right?
And maybe they aren't going to push back when they need to, or the people that push back are eliminated. So when you have somebody who has a really different take on things, and maybe it just doesn't like the internet, not everybody loves the internet, you know, his ability to like scope out the details, you know, is going to be hindered. I mean, who knows what was happening with that lawyer? If Masnick was correct about his critique of that, the lawsuit being brought,
yeah,
or you know, all the whatever legal actions, whatever you call that group of legal actions, you wonder, I mean, is that lawyer still there, because she just does what Prince tells her to do?
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of weird. And also, I'm glad they took it back, though. Those 22 fans were gonna, their lives were going to get really ruined for a while, maybe for a really long time. And that's something people like Prince need to take into account.
Yeah.
You know, these are real human beings on the other end. So that kind of bothers me.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, thankfully, the suit actually only named two of the defendants by name. I think all the others were URLs or Facebook usernames or stuff like that. So thankfully, not that many of the identities of the fans actually came out. And who knows actually where they were located. I mean, it may well be that they just found the 22 fans and they may have been located anywhere in the world, which would have made the lawsuit an absolute nightmare in terms of implementation and prosecution of any of these fans. So hopefully they came to their senses and decided to take this back. But I'm still excited about the dates in London. So we're going to see what happens there. Yeah. And I would just recommend anybody that goes to see the gigs not
it's quickly forgotten.
Yeah, but don't take out your phone if you go to one of those gigs because you might get arrested. So just make sure your phone stays firmly in your pocket, and I think you'll be fine. If they catch recording anything, that's it. There were a couple of bits of news coming from Rap Genius actually. They were pretty interesting out of New York this week, and the company announced a deal with Universal Music Publishing, which is their second major publishing deal after the one announced with Sony ATV in the latter part of 2013. So that's good news for them. It means that they're becoming more legitimate as a service, having been on some of the lists of naughtiest worst companies for copyright infringement from some of the organization the copyright organizations over the last year. In other news, the company has also announced more significantly an iOS app which is simply called Genius. I guess they want to start getting rid of the associations with purely rap music, and it offers a really slick experience. It's really good. It's got a Shazam-like instant song recognition. It can scan your iTunes library. It links out to YouTube, and it has a SoundCloud embeds right within the app if the SoundCloud track is available on the service. A lot of pretty cool features, and it works pretty seamlessly. So, is Rap Genius coming of age? And, as a service that can really become the de facto place to consume lyrics, and in that sense, can it also threaten some of the other lyric services that are out there? From your New York perspective, what do you think, Pete?
I think they're doing a great job. I mean, they keep getting in trouble with likes of Google and the labels, but they have. Lyrics, I mean, it's just so easily searchable online, and they have an immense presence, and they've got a community that's being built. And they started with a really, passionate community with hip hop and rap. So I think, they still got a long ways to go, but I think they're doing the right thing, and they're being more reactive than proactive.
Yeah.
But from a business standpoint, I think that's, it's suiting them well because they care more about what the users are doing than what they care about the auxiliary businesses that are affected. I'd like to see where they continue to head. I've heard different things about how they're going to expand beyond music and such. But, for me, it seems like they've got a really good hold on the lyric market.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And Clyde, on your end, from a sort of music tech reporter point of view, what do you think? Where do you think Rap Genius is heading? Is the app a key component to that growth? Because of course, that's really gonna make them in a way independent of Google as well.
Oh, I see. Independent of Google. Yes. It's the app's a smart move. It makes sense. I think I've always been wondered about how Rap Genius could move beyond lyrics. I mean, moving beyond hip hop lyrics alone is difficult when you look at I just feel like there's a lot of separation, like I'm into hip hop, but when I was writing about it, I was always surprised at how many of my educated white friends were kind of tripped out that I was writing about hip hop, and they'd ask me, do you actually listen to it? And this was just, I'm talking about just 5 years ago. So that makes me wonder about how they get beyond being Rap Genius.
Right.
And I can see it working out eventually with lyrics, but there's all this stuff when you're dependent on Google as they have been, then you can get other lyrics up and people will find them through Google, but through the search engine. But that, I'll be curious to know how other aspects beyond the rap lyrics are doing. But yeah. I could see them being very big in lyrics. There are a lot of unlicensed sites. They do a good job with that. I'm not sure how it'll go beyond the lyric space, though, to be honest. But, you know, maybe they'll pull it off.
Yeah.
Certainly licensing is a really – they kind of had to do it, but it's also the right thing and a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So
– especially with the funding that they had, that they received. It's kind of hard to steer away from, from licensing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Especially with the millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of it's difficult to justify at that point when you have that money in the bank not to do the deals. But you know, the app when you started out actually says lyrics, poetry, and prose. So I guess their aim is to be the reference point to explain almost anything that comes into the realm of the written word in a wider sense. So it's going to be interesting to see whether they actually decide to get into the book space, for example, or how they do that, and whether that could have some interesting applications for, you know, literature, but we're going to have to see. That would be quite funny coming from a company that started as a rap lyrics site. And, you know, looking at the next thing that I want to talk about, that would be a quick jump into China, actually. I wanted to just move out of our Western comfort zone and move into China, where Josh Horwitz at Tech in Asia reported about 10 days ago that Baidu has launched a new hardware product, which is a wireless music streaming box that retails for 99 yuan or $16 and can be connected to any sort of set of household speakers to broadcast music from smartphones, essentially, from services like Xiaomi in China, Baidu Music, Douban FM, Domi Music, QQ Music, and others. And in other news from China, also, the PRS for Music magazine reported that the International Confederation of Authors and Composers Societies, which is CISAC, has opened an office in Beijing after successfully negotiating with the Chinese authorities and securing their support. So these two news together sort of kind of keep pointing me in the direction of a China that is opening up to sort of the Western, I guess, approach to music consumption, which is a more sort of rights-oriented one, and that the country might actually start tightening its copyright laws, which it already has done in on paper. There's a few bills, I think, that are going through in China at the moment that are looking at doing just that as well. And so it could actually become an interesting area of expansion, whilst, you know, right now it's still a very small industry in terms of recorded music revenues. Clyde, do you see a lot of companies that are looking at China yet in the music space? Is it something that you see mentioned at times, or are people still fairly sort of wary of where the country's stance is on music?
Mm. That's an interesting question. I haven't seen... It seems... occasionally I've kept up with what more independent artists are trying to do, touring in China, building a base there. I know that activity is kind of ongoing. You don't see it unless you dig for it.
Yeah,
I don't know what's happening with other music interests. I know some like Paul McCartney did a big messaging app ad campaign based, or a brand, not an ad campaign, but he had an account on one of the big messaging services.
That's right.
Was that Chinese?
I think that was Chinese. Yeah,
I think so, but other than that, I'm not hearing China quite a bit, but I'm not hearing a lot. Yeah. I thought the music box, I'm not sure what it was called, but the piece of hardware was interesting news. I didn't write about it because we don't really cover hardware so much, but this whole thing of services struggling for the music services trying to get into the living room through the TV is... It interested me in relationship to that because if you're, you know, with a TV, there's this thing of you have to turn it on and make a choice. With something that plays music, you know, like the radio or whatever, usually just turn it on. It's already at your station. There may be a chance for a dedicated piece of hardware like that that's different and more attuned to the web and stuff to make some moves in that area.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly. essentially, a tiny like Sonos component without the speaker, which is just like essentially the hardware to hook up to speakers. I think there's a few things on Amazon that are sort of actually made in China. I think that are relatively cheap to do that, but I just don't know to what kind of level of efficiency that's possible right now. To be honest, I got like a really cheap Bluetooth speaker somewhere around here. It must be it's somewhere around here, and it's lovely. It sounds actually quite nice, but there's a lot of like very basic hardware issues with it, like for example, if you leave it on and then it starts losing charge, it starts beeping like crazy, which if you leave it on during the night, that's not good because it just wakes you up and stuff like that, you know, just basic things that, you know, haven't been worked out. So I'd be interested in seeing a more sort of established player that looks after some of the finer aspects of hardware software sort of integration to create some of those boxes and see how they perform in the marketplace. And Peter, on your end, have you seen a lot of brands looking at China? You know, is there anything that you guys do at the moment that has any China-facing aspects? And have you looked into the country as a potential place to do business? I mean, I've seen there's some huge campaigns going on in China at the moment. I was there in November, and they had like a massive car billboard campaign with, I think it was One Direction. They were everywhere and stuff like that. So there are also a lot of Western elements that are brought into China, but I just don't know. Online, the space is just seems so restricted with all the different laws and things that are into place.
Yeah, I mean, so far we haven't actually tapped any of the, we haven't done anything in China. We've been all on the outside, so we've done stuff in Singapore, Malaysia, Taiwan. But yeah, we haven't gotten into China. And mostly it's because who we work with, you know, usually we're going hand in hand with a music service provider of some sort. But yeah, China seems like this frontier that might be, it might take a while for a lot of people to kind of get into, in terms of digital music.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like, you know, a normal streaming service like the ones that we already know could just literally expand into China, because the licensing models, the way that people are monetizing music right now, is just so different. I just can't see a Deezer or a Spotify launch in China right now. Yeah. That could be quite tricky. I mean, hopefully Spotify will launch in Japan at some point this year, which could be fun to see, because Japan is kind of a relatively backwards.
It would be
Yeah, it's relatively backwards industry still. So. And so that could be quite fun to see whether they actually start adopting streaming as a thing whilst they're still consuming so much physical. But yeah, China is still kind of a black box right now. Finally, I wanted to talk about Sweden, of course. I kind of have to touch upon it. I try and avoid talking too much about stats because it seems like every week in January we get a new country revealing its own sort of IFPI or whatever sort of recorded music revenues from 2013. It seems like they're timing them week after week almost to get as much press as possible for each country that reveals the stat. But this week it was Sweden, and they revealed a 5% increase in recorded music revenues in 2013. Streaming rose 30% and now represents 72% of the country's total music revenues, which is huge. Of course, Sweden is a birthplace of Spotify, has been a testing ground for the company from the beginning. And, you know, broadband penetration is huge, so that's also a big factor. And a lot of people that I speak to tell me, you know, don't look at Sweden as, you know, maybe for some territories, it may be something that might happen there as well, you know, 4 or 5 years' time. Sweden might be ahead of time in that sense. But also the situation in Sweden is so specific that it's hard to see it being applied to somewhere like the US, for example, where you have so many different types of services on the streaming spectrum, which are from like sort of totally on demand to totally not on demand, like curated services like Pandora. So, you know, Pete, do you see, you know, of course, you know, I don't want you to comment on Sweden because, you know, there's not much point. We're not there ourselves. But as far as the US is concerned, you know, do you feel like in 3 or 4 years' time we could start getting into a place where the stats might start to resemble Sweden's, and where streaming really becomes the major slice of the pie when it comes to recorded music revenues?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think it's the trend. I mean, it's picking up, and that's where everything's headed. And I think it's just going to take a while. You know, a launch like Beats is really going to help, you know, push into the mainstream and get users actually acquainted with the idea of, you know, paying a subscription for music. You know, Spotify's done a great job, but, you know, getting into the U.S. market, it's difficult because people are still stuck in iTunes. They're still, you know, thinking about their CDs, some of them. You know, I find it funny when I speak to, you know, friends in my circles that are just finding out about Spotify, you know, and have no idea about Beats. So yeah, I think it's going to take about 2 or 3 years, but that it's inevitable. I think it's going to happen. And you know, we're all going to have, you know, the Sonos systems or the Baidus and those things accessing these streaming music services. We're all going to have playlists. We're going to have curators. It's going to get very, very cool. And I think Sweden is showing that the beginning of it, just because they are a smaller market and they're much more tech savvy. And they've had the ability to, you know, use Spotify for the last 5 years.
Yeah. Sure. Clyde, do you agree with Pete? You know, where do you see, it's one of the core debates on the show is where do we see streaming going in the US? Part of the debate is also generated by the fact that we don't know how many of the people that already subscribe to Pandora, which is a lot, are actually going to be willing to, you know, also use another service at the same time.
Oh, man, there's so many questions. Yeah. I mean, there are just so many services. There's so much behavior that's changing. Like when Pete was talking about Sweden, well, not you weren't just talking about Sweden, but I started thinking about I wonder what their internet service is like there and their mobile service, because a lot of these other countries have much better streaming both to the desktop and to mobile. Right. The US has made a huge mistake in letting the cable companies and stuff throttle our speed. I could go on and on about that for a while, but if you're interested, look at the municipal broadband movement. Look at all the cable companies that have stopped states like North Carolina, where I live. Cities are no longer able to do their own municipal broadband, and that's where the real speeds come from. Now, what they often bring is when they do that, a lot of these cities will do like free Wi-Fi throughout the downtown. Of course, mobile streaming is a different topic, but there's an infrastructure thing that's going to slow down some of the streaming shift, I think. But right. I agree. I think it seems pretty inevitable in certain senses. Certainly, I think, I don't know, a lot of the radio type listening will shift over both to web radio and to Spotify. Or things like Spotify that aren't exactly web radio or that are introducing things that are like web radio.
Yeah.
But, man, there are just so many players. It's hard to know.
Yeah, it's hard to know
how this will work out.
Where the wind is going
to
go.
So that the whole idea of throttling and the ability to download data, like my phone service provider only gives me 2 gigabytes a month. That's not
that's
fun.
Nothing.
And I pay a lot of money for it, too. So
yeah, I bet.
I feel very lucky here in the UK. I'm on unlimited broadband here with BT. It's only about $50 a month for 70 or 80 megs down per second and about 10 upload. Completely unlimited, no monitoring or anything, no throttling of any sort. So yeah, I feel very lucky about that.
You know, also on the mainstreaming, Beats is, you know, they're going to have a Super Bowl commercial with Ellen DeGeneres. I just found out that just started to get out yesterday. So their campaign, I think, is going to bring a lot of stuff to the mainstream. Whether they grab all that, how that works out, you know, that's going to be an interesting thing to watch play out.
Yeah.
But the mainstream is going to know about streaming after the next month or so, if they don't already.
And last week, actually, we didn't manage to really talk about, like, we didn't have a chance to mention the fact that Beats had quite a few issues in the first few days of service with the volume of users that were joining it. And so they actually had to shut down access to the service to sort out those issues. People were having random restarts of the app, and you know, they had to input the same information several times on the app before it actually stuck, stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to monitor, because the Super Bowl is only about a week away now. Or less, right? Is that just a few days out?
It happens actually this Sunday.
Oh, this Sunday. So if they do have a Super Bowl advert, that's going to drive a huge amount of traffic to the service. So it's really going to be interesting to see whether in the 2 weeks that follow the launch, they had enough time to sort out all of the bugs that were creating problems at the beginning.
Yeah. I bet they're working hard.
Yeah, I bet they're working really hard.
Man, stressing out.
Considering how much a Super Bowl advert costs as well. You know, you want to make the most of that. You don't want users to go to the site and find, oh, sorry, we sign up with the email, we can't really take any new users at the moment. So that would be a bit of a bummer. But it's going to be quite fun to see. I'm looking forward to seeing the advert, actually. I want to see what kind of angle they put to the service as well, because we've seen some attempts at advertising from other streaming services before. Like Pete, you will have seen late 2012 in New York when Arda did that massive billboard campaign in Times Square and elsewhere in New York, which was kind of like, it wasn't really explanatory in what Arda did or how the service worked. It was just a branding exercise in a sense. So it's going to be interesting to see whether Beats goes all out and actually explains what streaming is and what the company does, or whether they actually just tell people to go to beatsmusic.com and check out this new streaming service and hope that people get it from that.
I think they've done such a great job on the hardware side with their headphones, and yeah, they've got those artists like Dr. Dre lined up. I think, you know, making that jump right into digital music streaming, it's pretty easy for them, I think, and educating them just with those artists alone, just being like, our music is here, you know. So we shall see. But I think, yeah, they've got a great marketing engine. They got a lot of money to spend on it. So.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So that's it's definitely going to be an interesting challenge to see. Although the challenge for them is that they don't have a free tier. So definitely an interesting thing to look at, because, you know, just a week's worth of free trial is not going to be enough for most users. So,
yeah. And, you know, also you're going from marketing a product you buy once to marketing a subscription you pay for every month. And
yeah,
I don't know how that will play into all this, but obviously that's a very different thing. Although pretty much everybody's used to subscriptions now of some form, just paying their cell phone bill and other stuff. But yeah, I'm curious to see if that affects it as well.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, I want to let you guys go because we've kind of run long today. But I really want to first let you, have a chat about what you guys are up to. So, first of all, Clyde, on Hypebot, you know, just tell people briefly about, you know, what you guys do. Of course, most people will be aware of Hypebot that listen to the show. I would hope so anyway. So, but anyway, just go for it.
Well, at Hypebot, you know, we're a general music industry publication, but I focus, we're doing a lot of music tech. I think we, in terms of individual items, we're probably covering the broadest range of music tech companies from what I can tell. That's a big thing. I put a lot of energy into that.
Yeah.
And of course, we're also, I'm trying to keep DIY and indie music in that mix, and so is Bruce Hofton, our editor and publisher. And then I'm going to be representing Hypebot at an upcoming MIA Music Summit in Miami in February. And I think you're also going to be on there. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. So we're going to actually meet in person, which is good.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
Absolutely. And this is the Miami Summit, which is on, we lost the website, mms.co for anybody who wants to go and check it out. The Miami Music Summit is going to take place towards the third week of fourth week of
March 24th.
March 24th, that's right.
Yes.
So that's going to be quite fun. If you are in the Miami area, definitely check it out. And if you're not, go and check it out anyway. You might want to fly there. So definitely a conference to keep an eye on. And Peter, from your end, you know, just briefly, of course, if people haven't seen the one-to-one show, what do you guys do at F-Sharp, and how does it work?
Yeah, so we're basically focused on the future of branded entertainment online, you know, and the idea is basically that brands are getting much more interested in digital music, and you're seeing that happen much more across different streaming services like Spotify and Pandora. And it's not just banner ads anymore. It's more about interactive. It's more about engagement and figuring out ways of how do you target that audience as an advertiser?
Yeah.
And how do you reach out to the audience that's already engaging with music? So they're already consuming music. Now, how do we figure out how can we make sure that we're behind that, right, as an advertiser? How do we sponsor the content that they like to consume so that we get affiliated with that good content as well? And I think the approach is, it's great because we're taking the way that you perceive advertising today as a nuisance, as, you know, an interruption to your enjoyable experience online. And we're making it so it's, no, the brand is actually bringing you that experience. The brand is actually bringing you new music to discover. And we're doing that right now a lot and worldwide, actually, with Spotify. And now we're actually working with some new music service providers. And we have our own product called the Ad Player, which was just released at the end of last year. That is actually what got a few brands lined up actually for Q2. So
great.
I guess keep plugged and you know, go to fsharp.com, EFSHARP.com, check out more.
So that's great. So yeah, it's EFSHARP.com and hypebot.com. Thanks so much, guys, for taking the time to come on the show. I'm going to be at Medium from Friday, and then next week's show is going to be actually a Medium special. So it's not going to be a usual news show, but a bit of a collection of all the interviews that I'm going to produce during Medium. I've got about 25 plus interviews lined up already in my calendar, so it's getting pretty hectic for a four-day show, but it's going to be quite fun. So definitely tune in to next week's show and find out all about Medium 2014. Thanks so much for listening. Have a fantastic week, and until next time.